The stars shimmered above as Jack sat quietly at the foot of the LRV's boarding ramp. The moons hung large in the sky, casting eerie double shadows of different hues on the landscape. The night sky on Tau Ceti V had never seemed unusual to him, but he often wondered how it would seem to someone who had grown up under a Terran sky. It had taken over an hour to prep Maria for the 6-hour process of RMS reversal, and it would take even longer for her to wake up. Only then would they know if she was going to survive the revival process. After that, they would begin administering their concoction. They had agreed to take turns monitoring Maria's progress, each taking 2-hour shifts, promising to alert the other if something changed. So far, everything seemed to be going according to the manual. But the thought of one little failure starting a catastrophic chain of events continued to worry him. His fate also nagged at him. The rapid changing of day-to-day events as of late had left Jack with little time to contemplate his own future. But in quiet moments such as these, he could not keep his thoughts away from the most obvious question. What is to become of me?
I'm sure Maria will find a way to reverse whatever it is that has changed you, Jack.
Frank's approach caught him by surprise.
Sorry, Jack, but you're the one projecting the thoughts, not me.
Then just pretend you didn't hear them for my sake. It still freaks me out a little.
I'll try.
How's she doing? Jack asked, welcoming the distraction.
By the numbers, so far.
Frank sat down on the ramp next to Jack.
Seriously, though, Jack, there's got to be a way to reverse what's happened to you.
And if there isn't a way? What do I do then? How do I raise my children? How do I make love to my wife? How will I fit in at all in this utopia we're supposed to be building?
Maybe we could just shave your whole body, Frank joked.
Jack wasn't laughing.
Sorry, bad timing, huh?
Extremely.
Just try not to dwell on it for now. We have enough to worry about right now.
Jack smiled as best he could. His friend was right, even if he was tactless. There was plenty to worry about.
Am I up?
You think I came out here to look at your ugly mug?
Jack stood up slowly, stretching his long, simian frame. Despite his new physique, he still seemed to be carrying the aches and pains of all his years.
Why don't you hit the sack for a few hours, get some sleep? You are still recuperating, you know.
Good idea. I am pretty tired. What time do you want me to relieve you?
About 0400, I guess.
That's 6 hours from now, Jack. When were you planning to sleep?
One of the advantages of my new form. I don't seem to need as much rest as you humans, he joked, as he started up the ramp.
Frank didn't care much for the way Jack had already mentally separated himself from the human species. It couldn't be a healthy attitude. Frank also glanced up at the night sky. Somehow, even though they might still pass him by, it was comforting to know that his family was probably entering the Tau Ceti system about now. They were closer to him than they had been in the last 9 months, and at least now there was a possibility that he might see them again. But what would become of Jack? Jack's own thought had been planted into Frank's mind, haunting him as well. Jack woke suddenly, sitting bolt upright at the sound of the intercom beeping from the outer bulkhead at the head of his berth.
Yes,
he growled unintelligibly. Intercoms didn't work well with telepathic communication.
Jack, get in here!
Jack leapt from his berth, nearly ripping the curtains from their tracks in the process. Was something wrong with Maria?
What is it?
He asked as he entered the med lab.
She's starting to come around.
Jack looked around the room in surprise. Most of the tubes and wires that had supported Maria's very existence were gone, and only an IV, an oxygen mask, and the standard biosensors remained.
You took her off life support? Jack asked.
Around 8:30.
Why didn't you call me?
You needed your beauty sleep.
Frank looked Jack up and down.
I guess you still need a few more hours, huh?
Sarcasm was Frank's way to deal with uncomfortable situations. It always had been. But right now, Jack was too concerned about Maria to take offense at Frank's tactless remarks.
"Smartass," was all Jack could muster.
"Who are we kidding, Jack? She's going to be waking up soon. No offense, buddy, but your hairy mug might be a bit much for her right now."
Jack couldn't tell if Frank was still joking or not.
"Why don't you go clean up a bit?" Frank suggested. "Maybe shave a little and trim back some of that wild mane of yours. It might help her accept what's happened to you a little easier than I did, if you at least looked presentable."
Jack was a little shocked by Frank's suggestion, but he was making sense, despite his tactless presentation of the facts.
"And why don't you take a shower while you're at it? You smell like the waste processing compartment."
For some reason, Jack didn't feel offended by Frank's remarks. Frank was treating him the same way he had always treated him, despite his outward appearance.
"Go," Frank insisted. "She won't be lucid for at least another hour."
Jack stepped back, hesitant to leave.
"I'll call you as soon as she wakes, I promise."
Jack looked at Maria. Her skin was back to her usual olive color. Her chest rose and fell rhythmically, even without the aid of a respirator. A quick glance confirmed what he was seeing. She was alive. And more importantly, her biosensor readings were awfully good.
"It worked." "You're damn right it did," Frank said,
again hearing Jack's every thought in his head.
"Now get your ass in the shower before I toss you in there myself."
A wonderful feeling swept over Jack as he left the med lab and headed aft for the bathrooms, one that he had not felt for a long time. He had felt it when he first woke to find himself still alive after crash landing on this planet. He had felt it when he first picked up Frank's repeater signal, and again when he saw the LRV. It was a feeling of hope. And it felt good. Jack opened his hygiene kit. Everything was in its place, packed 9 months ago before they had left the Daedalus. Jack paused to look at himself in the mirror.
"How the hell do I clean this up?"
He stroked his beard for a moment. It was long, bluish-gray, and it felt greasy. His hair was the same, wild and unkempt, blending in with his beard as it cascaded down the sides of his neck. For a moment, he thought about cutting it all off, but was afraid of what he might find underneath. He decided to start by trimming his beard. Perhaps, if he could just neaten things up a bit, that would be enough. Jack pulled out the electric hair trimmer from the general hygiene locker and turned it on. Besides being long and unruly, his beard was quite tough, more like fine steel wool than human hair. It took several passes to get it trimmed down. He finally had to settle for a beard about 3 centimeters in length, after struggling to get it even throughout. He shaved close, down to the skin on his upper cheeks, trying to frame the beard in the way he remembered seeing in old historic photographs. No one on board the Daedalus had ever worn a beard. Shockingly, he found that his skin had also changed. It was tougher and darker than before. It resembled soft leather. It wasn't terrible, but it wasn't human. Brushing his teeth was also a new experience. When he opened his mouth to look at his teeth, not only were they dirty and yellow, his incisors had become long and fang-like, dulled at their ends. With his snout-like jaw and mouth, they made him look like a cross between an ape and a wolf. It was frightening to look at, even to him. The odd thing was, he recognized himself in the mirror. After deciding that he had done all he could, Jack chose to attempt a shower. But after removing his clothing, he realized that it might be more difficult than he thought. Having not removed his clothing completely in several months, he didn't realize how much his body hair had grown. His entire body was covered with a fine blue-gray hair, giving the appearance of a thin layer of fur. It was thicker in some areas, such as those where he had previously had human body hair, like his legs, arms, and chest. Jack wondered if there would be enough water available to thoroughly wash his furry body. The showers were rationed, with each crew member being given a weekly allotment for showering that they could only access using their personal 4-digit code. Jack stepped into the shower stall and carefully punched his personal code into the control unit.
The display showing how much water was left in his allotment brought a chuckle. It seemed that no one had thought to reallocate his portion of the ship's water supply. The control showed he had water available in his allotment for about 100 showers. "I guess I'll need it," he thought, trying to remember the last time he had bathed. Maria's eyes opened, slowly, immediately narrowing into a squint against the bright light of the med lab. Her head felt like it was going to explode, throbbing with waves of pain that made her grimace. She tried to lift her hands, but found they seemed to weigh a ton. She felt cold, naked, and vulnerable. And for the moment, she had no idea where she was or what had happened to her. Her vision was blurry. She tried to keep her eyes open, but found she could not do it without extreme pain. What little she could see was too bright. Sterile white walls, shiny metal counters and trays. She realized she was lying on something firm. Another wave of pain pulsed through her head, causing her to groan. Then she heard a voice. "Maria?" It was a man's voice. "Maria, can you hear me?" Maria tried to answer, but found her throat too dry to speak. She tried to swallow, but it was too painful. Her medical training began to kick in as she tried to analyze her own condition. "Dry mouth, headache, weakness, photophobia, blurred vision. What's wrong with me?" One by one, her senses seemed to be checking in. She could tell she was wearing an oxygen mask. She could also tell there was a tube in her nose, which added to the confusion. Next, she noticed there were sensors stuck to her skin in various places, and a discomfort in her right groin at the top of her inner thigh. Something else was down there as well. "Maria, it's me, Frank," the voice repeated. Memories began flooding back. The mission, the illness, the RMS. "Frank?" she managed to whisper. "Yes, it's me. It's Frank." "Frank? Where am I?"
"You're in the med lab."
"What happened?" Her voice was becoming stronger.
"You've just come out of stasis. How do you feel?"
"Terrible."
It was all coming back to her now.
"Are they here?"
she asked.
"Is who here?"
"She's talking about the Daedalus," Jack thought to Frank.
"No, Maria. They're not here yet."
Maria was confused.
"Then why?"
She had to stop and swallow.
"Why did you revive me?"
"We think we found a cure, Maria, but we need your help," Frank explained.
"A cure?"
she asked, still confused.
"We?"
As best she could remember, Frank had been the only one left. Frank chuckled.
"I've got a surprise for you, Maria."
"What?
Feel like a visitor?"
Maria squinted again, this time more from confusion. She struggled to focus as the blurry image of Frank faded away, only to be replaced by another image. A person. A man. Jack stepped to Maria's side.
"Can she see me?"
he asked Frank, when he noticed her squinting.
"Barely,"
Maria answered.
"Everything's blurry."
"She can hear me," he thought, with surprise.
"Of course I can hear you," Maria answered. "Who are you?"
His voice was familiar as well, although she couldn't quite place it.
"It's Jack, Maria,"
Frank told her.
"Jack?" she gasped in disbelief. "Is it really you?"
"Yes, Maria. It's really me." Maria fought to bring her vision into focus. She could see him, blurry as he was, standing next to her, gazing down at her.
"You're alive?"
"Yep, I'm alive." Maria wasn't sure if she was dreaming.
"I can't believe it. How did you—"
"It's a long story," he told her.
"Where's Will?"
she asked. Jack didn't know what to say. He knew how close they had been.
"Will didn't make it, Maria,"
Frank interrupted, taking the burden away from Jack. Maria was silent for a moment. But she had dealt with both their deaths long ago, and she was happy to see Jack again, at least almost see him.
"I'm sorry, Maria,"
was all that Jack could come up with at the moment. Maria continued trying to focus on Jack. He seemed so tall, looming over her. His face was covered with hair, his features distorted. Long, blue-gray hair hung from his head. She managed to get her left hand to rise up from her side, reaching out to touch his face. Jack recoiled from her touch. It was pleasant, though. Warm and gentle, moving him somehow. It had been so long since anyone had touched him in such a compassionate way.
"You need a shave, Jack," she said, as she touched his beard.
That's when her eyes began to focus. The image of Jack's face had been more in her mind's eye than through her retinas, and suddenly, without warning, that image had transformed into something else. It was still Jack's eyes, she noticed. The same old pale blue that always seemed to surprise you. But his face had changed, become distorted somehow. His jaw seemed longer, his skin leathery and cold to the touch. His brow was also more pronounced, and bushier than she remembered. Although this person resembled Jack, she was quickly realizing that it wasn't Jack. Not the Jack she remembered. Jack could see the realization in Maria's eyes, and it scared him. Maria could sense the fear in him.
"What is it, Jack? What's wrong? What's happened to you?"
Then her vision came completely into focus, and her hand withdrew from Jack's face in fear.
"Oh, my God!"
Jack could sense it, she knew. She saw him. "Maybe I should go," he thought. Frank motioned for him to stay, noticing that Maria's vital signs, though slightly elevated, were still within safe ranges. Maria heard Jack in her head, or at least she thought she did.
"Jack?"
Her voice wasn't fearful now. Kindness was creeping into it.
"Oh, Jack, is it really you?"
"Yes, Maria. I'm afraid it is, such as I am."
"I am hearing him in my head," she thought. "I must be dreaming," Maria decided out loud. "I swear I heard your voice, but your lips didn't move, like it was in my head."
"You're not dreaming, Maria."
"That's the way I hear him, too," Frank reassured her. "There's been a few changes around here while you were in stasis, Maria."
She heard him, but her attention was focused on this strange creature that apparently was Jack, somehow transformed into something not quite human. She reached out for him again, taking his hand and grasping it tightly.
"Oh, Jack."
"So, what's your recommendation?" Hal asked.
The gruff old scientist leaned back in his chair, looking at Captain Ishkin across the desk, knowing that his decision would seal the fate of the team on Tau Ceti V.
"I'm afraid that, given a choice between the fourth and sixth planets, I'd have to choose the fourth one."
Hal stared at the tired old scientist. He knew the poor guy had been working around the clock for the last 2 days. He also knew he had dreaded making that decision for the same amount of time.
"Yes," Hal agreed reluctantly. "That's what I figured." "And if you had to choose between all three?" Ray wondered.
The old scientist looked curiously at Ray as he pondered his question.
"Well, it would definitely be a toss-up between four and five, then. They both have their advantages and disadvantages," he began. "If you had to choose between four or five, which one would it be?"
Ray demanded to know.
"Ray?" Hal warned. "Assuming, of course, there was no disease on Tau Ceti V, that is." "Ray, come on," Hal objected. "It's a fair question," Old Man Wilkins argued.
"Thank you, Dr. Williams," Hal said. "That'll be all."
Dr. Williams looked at Hal, confused. Then he looked at Ray. Something was going on. He just didn't know what. His team had been asked to gather as much information on the new worlds as possible, using only long-range scans, and it was woefully inadequate.
Five, he announced. "Why?"
Ray wondered, intrigued by the scientist's response.
"Simply because we have a team on the ground already.
Both worlds seeming equal from afar, it only seems logical to go where you will eventually have the greatest amount of data about the world on which you are about to colonize.
Thank you, Doctor, Ray said. That will be all.
Very well, Captain.
Dr. Williams stood and straightened his shirt.
Mr. Wilkins, he said politely to Ray, as he exited.
Ray waited until the hatch was closed before he spoke.
Oh, you see? Even he thinks we should go to Tau Ceti V.
He just said that to please you, Hal said, as he pressed the intercom button. Mr. DiTullio to the captain's ready room.
Oh, we can't let him stick us on 4, Hal. The gravity is too weak.
It's not that weak, Ray.
Bullshit! In 10 generations, we'll all be 12 feet tall if we colonize that jungle.
It's not like we have a whole lot of options, Ray. A knock came from the hatch.
Enter!
The ship's navigator, Marco DiTullio, stepped through the hatch.
You wanted to see me, Captain?
Yes, Marco, he said, as he motioned for him to come in. Marco sat down in the chair that Dr. Williams had occupied only a moment ago. I need you to plot a course for a 4-6 intercept.
I can't do that, sir.
Why not?
Well, it's impossible, sir. At our present speed, we'll pass 6 before we pass 4. I can give you a 6-4 intercept, if you like.
Hal cast a glance at Ray, sure that they were having the same thought. In their fervor to find a way to rescue the advance team, neither of them had thought much about the position of the planets at their new arrival time. Where will 5 be when we arrive?
May I, sir?
Marco asked, as he reached for the terminal on the captain's desk.
As you can see here, he explained, as he called up the navigational display, the 4th and 6th planets will have already crossed our projected course on their way around the other side of the star, but the 5th planet will still be half a lap behind them. As you remember, we had originally intended to come in behind the 5th planet, while she was where the 6th planet is going to be now. I can take us wide of 6, if you like, right down 5's orbital path in between them.
Ray furrowed his brow as he studied the monitor.
What if we came in right down the middle, inside of the 4th planet's orbit, with the star on our port quarter?
Marco looked at Ray with a puzzled look on his face.
Why would we want to?
Answer the man, Hal instructed his navigator. He had an idea what the old-timer was getting at.
Well, I suppose we could. It's not the most efficient course, but it wouldn't cost us any more fuel. In fact, it might even save us a drop or two, since we wouldn't have to make much of a course correction. We'll take a little heat from the star, but nothing more than we can handle. But I still don't understand why.
Ray picked up a stylus and drew a line on the screen to indicate his proposed course. Then he drew a dotted line that angled away from that course to the port, beginning just past the outer edge of the system and continuing into the system until it intercepted Tau Ceti V as it would be coming around the far side of the star. Marco's eyes widened as he caught on, looking over to his captain, who was holding one finger up to his lips.
I'll need you to calculate both those courses, Mr. DiTullio. I prefer to have options available at all times, just in case, the captain added, with a wry smile.
Yes, sir.
And I'll need you to calculate a decision point as well.
Understood, sir. I'll get on it right away, sir.
Thank you, Mr. DiTullio. That'll be all.
Yes, sir.
Marco rose and left the room, still puzzled by their conversation. Again, Ray waited until the hatch was closed before speaking.
The Council will fry your ass if they catch on.
That they will, Hal agreed. No matter, since once we arrive, I'm going to be out of a job anyway.
Ray laughed as he rose to leave.
Oh, you're a lot like your great-grandpappy, my boy.
Ray patted him on the shoulder as he left.
Oh, a lot like him.
Hal watched Ray leave as he thought, Yep, we're both willing to go along with your crazy schemes.